Hello, and welcome to this episode of Cargo Facts Connect, the podcast of Cargo Facts, the newsletter of record for the air cargo and freighter aircraft industries for over 40 years. I'm Jeff Lee, editor of Cargo Facts, and it's Friday, the 26th of April. Last week, the industry came together in Singapore for Cargo Facts Asia, and I had the chance to talk to Singapore Airlines Senior Vice President of Cargo, Marvin Tan, in a fireside chat. Singapore Airlines is the launch operator of the upcoming A350F and is working behind the scenes to prepare for the entry into service of this new type in 2026. Tan and I also discussed its background, the market generally, and more. Take a listen.
Now, Marvin, you were appointed to your current role almost a year ago now. Why don't you share with us a bit about your personal and professional background? For those who may not be familiar with you.
Sure, thanks Jeff. I've been with Singapore Airlines for about 28 years. New to the cargo business, yeah, most of my career has been spent on the passenger side of the business. So when I came in June of last year, a bit of a learning curve, you know, and some would say not the best time to come into the cargo business after the COVID period. But the other way to look at it is that the only way is up. Yeah. So what I have gone through over the last couple of months reminds me in some ways of how volatile and how challenging in some ways the cargo segment of the business is compared to the passenger segment. I think the first panel talked a lot about the challenges, things like directionality, imbalances. These are really, really pronounced in the cargo segment of the industry compared to the passenger segment. So those are the things that I'm getting to know a lot more about. And of course, working with the team to find out what our strategies are moving forward of trying to deal with these kinds of challenges, which are pretty unique to air freight.
And to go back even further, how did you get into aviation and how did you get into the SIA group?
Okay, I am not an aviation person by training. Yeah, my degree is in arts. But having lived and studied overseas, obviously travel and everything was very interesting for me. So coming back to Singapore, Singapore Airlines, they do have a sort of management development program where they just bring in people with various backgrounds and they give them opportunities to go and develop within the company and to rotate them. So I felt that was a very interesting program for me to hopefully be a part of. So that started my career back in 1996. Yeah, this is actually my second job. My first job was in Hong Kong. And in some ways, it's a bit of a back to the circle type thing, because my first job was actually in garments and textiles in Hong Kong. Mm. So now I'm actually carrying the things I used to manufacture and produce.
Yeah. You touched on this. You were saying how this is perhaps not the best time, but in other ways, it's also the best time to be joining, because you're learning so much and you're dealing with so many different challenges that you're really equipping yourself going forward. How would you compare what you're doing now on the cargo side with what you were doing previously on the passenger segment? I mean, you were, I believe, mainly looking after passenger services and interiors and seats and things like that. And now you're dealing with planes that don't have any seats for the most part in them, and you're dealing with boxes and things.
Sure. Yeah, I guess the first thing I don't really miss about the passenger side of the business are having to look after some of the issues when we drop the ball in terms of customer services. That part of it is always a painful part of it because we take a lot of pride in our service. So obviously when things don't go to plan, flight delays, baggage handling, I think that is the kind of area where someone has to do the job, you know, and I'm thankful for the team that I had to work with. But that's something that happens every day, so can be a bit of a grind. Yeah. But I think now moving into cargo side, I think two things. One, obviously it's a very heavy B2B space, you know, compared to passenger side. And related to that, obviously, is also the drive towards digitalization. Yeah, I think the passenger space, because it's largely B2C, so it's very easy in some ways to scale up. Once you find a workable platform that your customers and your passengers are happy to adopt, you can roll it out pretty quickly. But here, because of the supply chain, all the different stakeholders involved, I think getting systems and platforms up and running and all the integration, I think tends to seem to be more of a challenge and takes a lot more time.
Mm. Now, going back to the current market and the climate, What's it like to be leading SIA Cargo? I mean, we've got so many things going on in the world. How are you addressing these events and managing your team?
Yeah, in some ways, the first panel that I think Guillermo talked with them or discussed with them about what happened in the pandemic. If you talk about the mother of all disruption events, because maybe that's tempting fate a little bit. But clearly the team had to go through that period. And obviously the passenger side of the business had its challenges. And for the cargo side, similar to I think a lot of my colleagues in the industry, you got to find a way to pivot, right? So converting planes to carry cargo, including ripping out of seats so that you can use the main cabin as well. I think those are the things that the team did over the COVID period. And it just highlighted the need to be ready and agile to look at all these kinds of solutions. Cargo, certainly, we are very vulnerable to externalities. Yeah. Over the weekend, with what happened with Iran and Israel, we've got payload issues now that we're going to grapple with, right? Because a lot of our capacity is in the belly hold. So the flights will go nonstop, and they have to go nonstop for the passenger experience. But it means, unfortunately, cargo gets the short end of the stick. We have to adapt with that. We have to quickly find some solution, work with our partners to obviously try to recover the cargo that's been held back. But at the same time, not knowing how long this situation is going to last, you also have to map out your sales strategies, your freight forwarder engagement in the days and weeks ahead. So this is the kind of thing, I guess, particularly in the cargo business, where you really do need to have a team that can react and respond very quickly.
Hmm. How about some of your freighter flights that go to Europe?
Yeah, well, freighter, the good thing is we can always do a tech stop. Yeah, I don't think our passengers from Singapore to London will be happy with a tech stop. Yeah. So that is the challenge that we face with. So we've got more options. It may be more costly, but at least you still have options to try to protect the payload as best as you can.
Hmm. Generally, what's your view of the current market we're in? Both globally, but specifically in the Asia-Pacific region?
Yeah, it's. I think the panel also covered on the phenomenon is the wrong word, but on this movement in terms of e-commerce and how it's such a driving force, particularly in the last year or so. And we have no exception. Yeah, we've seen that help to lift a lot of our volumes as well. It had been a tough first half of the year last year, and then towards the second half, we started to see volumes pick up again. A lot of that is due to e-commerce. And certainly, with the Red Sea situation also coming into the picture, we didn't see too much of that at the end of the year, but I think after Chinese New Year, we started to see some of that impact flowing through in terms of our volumes. Yeah. So that's really where things stand now. The volumes are pretty healthy, but pricing is what it is. Yields are what they are, and you just have to be competitive or continue to be competitive.
Right, and hopefully things will get better as the year progresses. Yeah. Speaking of, just a quick follow-up to that, on the e-commerce side, what specific things are you and SIA Cargo doing to manage and address this growing business segment of the business?
Well, for us, right now, the flows are pretty concentrated in terms of, obviously, North Asia to the US and North Asia to Europe. So it's really making best use of the capacity that we have. We've got 7 freighters. Four flights to the US, and I think we have a couple of flights to Europe as well. Yeah, so we are fully maximizing those opportunities. The challenge with cargo always is, it's not a problem mounting more services that way. It's trying to make sure you can make the numbers work by also filling the return leg. Yeah, so I think that's something that we have to work very closely with in terms of our folks in the US and in Europe as well. Looking at partnerships, I think the first panel also talked about partnerships. That's also very important for us to try and connect the dots to look for opportunities.
And now we come, of course, to your A350s. Of course, you were one of the first identified airlines or customers to order or to commit to the A350F. And you, in fact, were the first 747-400 freighter operator to pick the A350 to replace those 747s. How are you and your team preparing for the arrival of these brand new freighters?
Yeah, it's really a lot of work, and rightly so. I think we really have to go through all of our processes, our systems, our training, our preparedness, even staff engagement with a fine-tooth comb. Yeah, clearly, it's not only just the introduction of the new fleet, but for us, it'll be the first time really that we have had had to have a mixed operation for a period of time until obviously when we retire the 747-400s. Yeah, so a lot of work on that front, not only in terms of getting to know the aircraft itself, but also in terms of the ecosystem, the operations, the ULDs, our loading equipment with all our ground handling agents and service partners. So a lot of work, I think, lined up to help us get ready ahead of the EIS in 2026.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's basically a change in
almost everything. Yeah, that's right.
During this period when you'll be operating both types, you'll obviously have more capacity than you do now. But when you do remove those, you'll kind of be taking away capacity again. How do you balance that, and how do you think about that when it comes to offering this capacity and making use of it?
Yeah, we can't actually rule out the possibility that we may be prepared to go a little bit under capacity, depending on the situation, depending on the landscape at that point in time. I mean, if demand is sluggish at that point in time, we have no, because we have to make some decisions. It's quite costly to go ahead with some of the HMB, you know, the SSIs. So we do need to make a call as we get closer to the date to say, depending on the capacity that we need at a point in time, we can go either way, to keep for a little bit longer, but at the same time to quickly make an exit with the 744s. Yeah.
Speaking of this transition from the 744s to the A350s, I have a question here from the audience. Is downgauging from the 747-400F to the A350F a vote against cargo growth at SIA?
It's in terms of the payload, it's actually 6,500. I think it's pretty close. But from an operational perspective, I think two things. One, obviously, you lose the nose loading capability. Yeah, for us, it's a fairly small segment of the cargo, so I think it's manageable for us. Yeah, the other aspect, of course, is more just in terms of you go into detailed operations, the loading configuration, because of the different contours of the aircraft. So some adjustment needed there. But if you're talking about payload, I think the max payload difference is about 3 to 4%. Yeah. And of course, bear in mind, we have 747s. We could have up to 12 A350s as well. And then you add on all the belly hold capacity that we're also adding. I think we have 140 wide bodies now across the SIA group. We have orders for another 45 more firm planes coming in between now and I think within the next 5 years. Yeah, so that's still a fair bit of capacity.
Right, right. How do you balance that with your freighter fleet? And how does that influence whether you or how you think about your where you operate your freighters versus the belly operation?
Yeah. I think it gives us certainly a lot of flexibility in terms of how we want to configure the network with all that kind of belly hold capacity, and clearly our freighters will go to most of the major ports, you know, like LA's, Hong Kong's, Brussels. I think one of the benefits of having this kind of relationship is because when you look at the directionality of cargo, right over the last, I guess, couple of years, looking at yields, I think it has sustained a lot of the freighter operations. So you see a big injection of freighter capacity coming into the market during COVID and also remaining as we speak. But I think as operating conditions maybe start to change, we've seen handling costs, fuel costs is very high compared to pre-COVID. When we look at that picture, and if we start to look at the yields start to move, and if that sort of gap, if you want to call it that, narrows, I think we have to take a very close look at freighter operations and its long-term sustainability. I think that definitely how it works has to be in tandem with how we also deploy our belly hold capacity. I think there will be opportunities where the numbers are very strong, very robust, make a very good case for freighter operations. But for other routes, because our network is very important for us, having the balance between passenger and belly hold will help us ensure that the network is still sustained and strong.
Now, it's obviously very, very hard to say and to look forward as to what's going to happen. But how would you assess the next few months in terms of the market, and where do you think by the, let's say June, halfway point of this year, where do you think we'll be?
If you ask me about the passenger in the next few months, I could tell you.
Yeah.
But for cargo, it's tough. Honestly, you can see over the weekend, with the new inject that we're having to grapple with, it's really looking almost like a week-by-week basis. We were getting a bit of a purple patch with the Red Sea. Again, I don't know how long that will last. So all these factors come into play in terms of us figuring out how best to make use of the capacity that we have on hand until, of course, the 350s come online.
Right. Well, speaking of the A350s, I'm sure we're all looking forward to seeing your first one painted and delivered to Singapore Airlines and eventually start flying around the world. Thank you so much, Marvin, for talking to me and sharing your insight with us. And again, we look forward to seeing what you do with the business and the A350s.
That was Marvin Tan, Senior Vice President of Cargo at Singapore Airlines, talking to me at Cargofax Asia in Singapore last week. And that's all the time we have today. For more coverage of the freighter aircraft market, visit cargofax.com. Thank you very much for tuning in, and join us again next time.